Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Technological advances in communication have drastically changed the way we interact, learn, and do business. More than 6 billion people use cell phones, and hundreds of millions communicate and connect through other wireless electronic devices. But the proliferation of these devices has created a debate around their health effects and impact on our private and public spaces. On today's Your Call, we begin a week-long series looking at our hyper-connected world, and we're kicking it off by talking about the microwave radiation that connects us to our phones, tablets, and other electronic devices. How does this invisible radiation work, and what are the possible side effects? Today, we are joined by Dr. Deborah Davis, a renowned epidemiologist and toxicologist and an expert in environmental health. Dr. Davis was the founding director of the Center for Environmental Oncology and currently serves as president of Environmental Health Trust, a nonprofit devoted to researching and controlling avoidable environmental health threats. She's the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation and Your Health, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and What You Can Do to Protect Your Family. Hi, Deborah. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Rose. Always happy to talk with you.
Well, it's always good to have you. We're also joined by Dr. Lewis Lesson, editor and publisher of Microwave News. For more than 30 years, Microwave News has been reporting on the potential health and environmental impacts of electromagnetic fields and radiation. Hi, Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Lloyd Morgan is a senior science fellow at Environmental Health Trust. For more than a decade, Lloyd has been involved in the study of exposure to electromagnetic fields and health problems. And Lloyd joins me in studio. Hi, Lloyd. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So it's kind of amazing to read these stats that 91% of the world is on a cell phone. I mean, that's a huge percentage. Lloyd, does it surprise you that these devices are so ubiquitous? And does it surprise you that it's happened so quickly?
It surprises me that it's happened so quickly. It does surprise me that they're so ubiquitous. I mean, the total adaptation of our society to these communication devices has changed the very way that people exist.
We were talking earlier about how you cannot go anywhere, at least in the Bay Area, without seeing almost 80 to 90% of people holding a device.
Yes.
Well, around the world today, we have more cell phones than toilets.
Wow. And some people actually own two or three of these.
Well,
devices.
In most industrial countries, there is more than one phone per person.
Deborah, has it surprised you when you look at how quickly this has changed?
Not really. The industry has been brilliant at marketing and really has done a very good job at suppressing science, as Lewis Lesson has repeatedly documented in his excellent website, Microwave News.
Lewis, what really strikes you about just the ubiquity of these devices and how fast people have embraced them?
Well, I think the important thing also is that people love them. I mean, people really do want them. They give them to their kids. They are everywhere because people do, people don't want to hear that there's any potential ill effects because people do their own little cost benefit analysis, and the apparent benefits seem to outweigh any of the costs, partly because they don't know anything about the costs.
So talk a little bit about the microwave radiation that connects all of these devices, because, I mean, even if you don't have one on you, or say you put your cell phone in airport mode or airplane mode to turn off the wireless, chances are someone sitting right next to you has one, this happens to me all the time, in their pocket. So it's right next to my leg. Even if I try to avoid it, I can't.
Well, the thing to remember is that when you look for a Wi-Fi connection on your computer, often your computer will, depending on if you're in an urban area, your computer will offer you maybe 10, 15, maybe more Wi-Fi connections. Of course, the one in your home may be the number one one, but that just shows you just how many different wireless signals are around you. And if you're walking in a city, my goodness, there is a little meter that some friends in England have put out, which makes a noise every time you're near a wireless signal. And walking around a city with one of these meters would open up. The point is that they're invisible. None of your senses work to register microwaves unless it's very intense and it heats you up. So there's no way people actually are aware of the microwaves that surround them. But if you had one of these acoustimeters, it would open up a whole new world to people.
Hmm. Well, and the thing is, Deborah, we don't really think about the microwave radiation because we want the information downloaded as quickly as possible, and we get angry if we don't get the email right away. And so it's not something we think about. But can you paint a picture? Like, if we could see it, what would it look like?
Well, as a matter of fact, the cell phone is the only device designed to be held directly next to the human brain while it's being used. All these other exposures, there's some distance, but as we all know, it's the combined effect that's so terribly important. I think we start with the basic concept of nomen est omen. What we call something is very important. Industry has succeeded in saying that the emissions from phones, which are two-way microwave radios, are RF, or radio frequency energy. Everyone wants more energy, and radios, of course, make music, so it sounds like a very pleasant term. But another word for radio frequency energy is microwave radiation. And if people understood that cell phones are two-way microwave radios, they would be thinking differently about how they use them, and they certainly would not be encouraging young children to treat them as pacifiers or put them in their front pockets right over their reproductive organs. And we at Environmental Health Trust are working hard with other groups to promote awareness of this. There is an exciting new book, Overpowered, by Martin Blank, that's about to be published, I think, just tomorrow, which does cover some of the same issues I cover in my book, Disconnect. And by the way, I hope your listeners will like us on Facebook at Environmental Health Trust and help us get the word out, because we're not anti-technology. We're just in favor of safety.
Lloyd, you wanted to jump in?
Microwave radiation has been declared a possible human carcinogen by the World Health Organization. This is a very serious problem, and among the other possible carcinogens are lead, DDT, carbon tetrachloride. So think about yourself exposing yourself to those things. This is a serious charge. Now, the industry war games that this is not a problem at all. They kind of laugh it away, and their own vocabulary is war game.
So, but again, because we can't see it, it's not something people think about, and that's why it's so easy to put the cell phone on your body when you're working out, for example, in a sports bra. A lot of women do that. Or right when you wake up in the morning, you grab your phone and you read the news, you check your email, and it's right in bed with you practically. So what would it look like if you could see the microwave radiation?
Well, you wouldn't be able to see anything because it just permeates your vision totally.
If you could see it.
Yes.
It would look like you were in a sea of radio frequency radiation, because it is like a sea of waves. Now, let me be clear. Actually, some forms of microwave radiation are being used in medicine today to treat and find cancer. So regular continuous signals of microwave radiation can have some benefits medically. It's the discontinuous, disruptive seeking for the signal, where our phones are programmed every 900 milliseconds to look for a signal from the phone to the tower and back again. And that means that no matter what you're doing, the phone is constantly on, even when you're not using it. And as the phones are designed today with symmetrical antennas that go around in a circular motion, half of the exposure of anything to which the phone is next to, namely your brain or your body, gets into you, kind of like this sea, invisible sea that's seeping into the body. If we could see it, we would be using it very, very differently, I assure you. I hope we'll get to talk about what's happening in Maine with the Wireless Information Act, because Andrea Boland has just succeeded in reintroducing a very simple law that says that people have a right to know about the safety information that is now buried inside phones or in fine print warnings. And the state of Maine should be able to recognize and exercise its authority to protect the citizens from Maine of a risk that the mass majority are completely unaware of. One of the interesting things to develop there is that Harvard professor Lawrence Lessig, who is the Roy L. Furman Professor of Law and Leadership and the director of the Edmund J. Safra Center for Ethics at Harvard University Law School, discussed this specific law in his lecture on money in politics just yesterday in Maine. And he publicly announced that to those who say it is unconstitutional to have a law requiring that people be informed of this, he would help Maine defend this law all the way to the Supreme Court pro bono.
Lloyd?
The impact of these of this possible carcinogen is incalculable. You just mentioned a little bit ago about women keeping their cell phones in their sports bras. There is now a case series, and the local TV station here, KTVU, won an Emmy Award for a 3.5-minute show, where women keeping it in their bras had multiple primary breast cancers right beneath where the antennae, and there are more than one antenna in the smartphones today, kept, you know, from the, you know, breast cancers from those things. The breast is probably the most absorbent tissue of all. Second is the brain. The brain basically absorbs half of the radiation when you place it to your ear, so that it's not even available for the cell tower to pick up. And it's that energy is just being wasted, but a real potential for many types of tumors, brain cancer, acoustic neuroma. There's a big salivary gland in our cheek, parotid gland. This information is available in the science domain, but the public is unaware of it in the public domain.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you, Lewis. I mean, Microwave News has been reporting on the potential health and environmental impacts of electromagnetic fields and radiation for more than 30 years. Can you talk about what you've seen in terms of what kind of research has come out? How often does this come out, and how conclusive is this is the research?
Well, the word conclusive, I just take issue with that, just because the industry uses that to say there's no conclusive evidence. Well, there's very little conclusive evidence about most things in the world, and so that's a very high burden which we should try and avoid. But the lesson of 30 years, as I'm fond of writing on microwavenews.com, is that we never really make much progress. And we're still fighting about the same thing. Like another issue that's different from the one we're talking about today is power lines, children and adults working or living near power lines, and what are the, this is another form of electromagnetic waves, and what are the health impacts of that? And we're still fighting about the most basic ideas, because the research does not get done. And the same thing is going on. You know, I think people need to understand that basically there is one single experiment going on. It's a large one, but it's been going. It was first proposed, I think, in 1999. But this is the only experiment going on in the United States that is looking into the health issues related to exposure to microwave radiation. I mean, we should have some expertise. I mean, with the whole world going wireless, we need to build up some expertise so that so we know what we're doing. But there's nothing going on.
I absolutely agree. What Lewis is referring to is the National Toxicology Program was told in 1999 to start a study of the biological impact of wireless radiation on animals as part of its priority research to identify potential human carcinogens. Animal research is very important for this purpose, because every compound that we know for certain causes cancer in humans will also produce it in animals when adequately studied. So the National Toxicology Program is absolutely essential to allowing us to know what are the hazards in the world today with which we're dealing. While wireless radiation, and specifically cell phones, was nominated to be studied in 1999, for a variety of reasons that reflect the power of this industry to a great extent, and the complexity of the study, the research did not actually begin until 2009, 10 years later. In 2009, I testified before the U.S. Senate that we needed a dollar a phone fee for 5 years to create an independent funding source for training in bioelectromagnetics, because most physicians know nothing about electricity and most electrical engineers know little about medicine, so that we would have the capacity to understand the science that Lewis, Lloyd, and I are talking about here today. What has happened is just to the contrary. We have one major study underway at the National Toxicology Program. Results may be released at the end of this year or next, and yet we have no monitoring whatsoever going on with the experiment in which we are all participating. If cell phones were a drug, we would be required to do monitoring and surveillance. Right now, if cell phones were a drug, they would be illegal, because they have never been tested for safety.
and all the other possible carcinogens are monitored except electromagnetic radiation.
Lloyd, you've been studying this you've been studying exposure to electromagnetic fields since 1995.
Correct.
What really strikes you about the research that has and hasn't been done?
Well, it's very interesting because I had a brain tumor, and my neurosurgeon said, when I asked him why did I get it, he said possibly electromagnetic fields. So I went immediately to the science. I immediately found industry-funded studies showing statistically significant risk for brain tumors and leukemia from electricity fields. And I was stunned because if it's in the science domain, why isn't it in the public domain? Since then, the literature has built up to an enormous level to the point that I would say that it is not a possible, it's not a probable, it is a carcinogen.
So what does that mean for those of us who use all these devices?
Well, I think caution. I mean, the idea, especially in Europe, is what we call precautionary. That is, don't, you know, whenever possible, use a hands-free set when you're using a phone. Keep it away from your body, as Deborah's been saying. I mean, the thing to understand about putting a cell phone in say, a man putting it in his trouser pocket, it would violate the standard that has been set. There's no way that a phone in your pocket, flush to your skin, or you know, with a small barrier for the pocket, would meet the current standards. So, you know, children should not be using them. This is a kind of a prescription of how to use cell phones safely. No one, let me be clear, no one is suggesting that we get rid of this technology. In fact, that would be impossible at this point. But there are ways to use it, and putting a cell phone next to your brain, say you're in a windy environment, and pressing it against your head, you're also going to be violating the standard. I mean, there's some very common sense things you can do, and we should be doing them.
Let me add to that the standard, so to speak, is based on just two things. A phone is tested, simulated against a giant empty bowling ball of plastic into which a homogeneous liquid is poured, and a computer probes systematically to see what the temperature could be in that liquid over a period of the equivalent of a 30-minute phone call or a 6-minute phone call, depending on the country and the standard. It is never tested in the shirt pocket or pants pocket. And as Lewis just said, if phones were tested for the exposure in the pants or shirt pocket, none of them would meet the current standards that have been proposed of 1.6 watts per kilogram averaged over a 1 gram volume about the size of a blueberry. Now, we need to recognize that those standards are 17 years old. Would you want to fly in an airplane with 17-year-old safety standards? Would you want to drive a car with 17-year-old safety standards? Of course not. So it's preposterous that we're still using phones that comply with this old standard in ways that we're using them, and people using them, such as infants and small children, were never, ever anticipated by the inventors of cell phones in the first place to be users. We at Environmental Health Trust provide very simple information, which you can find by going to our website, ehtrust.org or environmentalhealthtrust.org, clicking on Downloads, and we have a doctor's pamphlet, which has been translated into Finnish, Turkish, Spanish, Greek, and, of course, English, which gives you the reasons why we need to be concerned and 6 simple things you can do to protect yourself and your children, the most important message being distance is your friend, and don't use phones where signals are weak, because the phone works harder, you drain your battery faster, and that battery drains right into you as a result.
That is Dr. Deborah Davis. She's a renowned epidemiologist and toxicologist. She's president of Environmental Health Trust, a nonprofit devoted to researching and controlling avoidable environmental health threats. She's the author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation and Your Health, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and What You Can Do to Protect Your Family. Lloyd Morgan is a senior science fellow at Environmental Health Trust. For more than a decade, he's been involved in the study of exposure to electromagnetic fields and health problems. And Dr. Lewis Slesson is editor and publisher of Microwave News. For more than 30 years, they've been reporting on the potential health and environmental impacts of electromagnetic fields and radiation. And today on Your Call, we are kicking off a week-long series looking at our hyper-connected world. And today we're talking about the microwave radiation that connects us to our phones, tablets, and other other devices. What do you want to know about how radiation works? What concerns do you have? Where do you go for information? Do you do anything to reduce your exposure level? And if you're a researcher who's looked into this issue, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And if you have any questions about radiation or exposure, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Rob in San Francisco sends a message. How much power do the Bluetooth hands-free earpieces emit compared to actually holding the phone next to your head? Are these devices any safer?
Bluetooth uses about a tenth the power that cell phones use. But the question is people keep them on their ear like 16 hours a day. So it's also cumulative with time. And then the question is where is the cell phone while you are talking on using the Bluetooth to connect? If it's on your body, you're getting a double whammy. Now, a Bluetooth in a car dashboard is at a certain distance away, and I would consider that safe enough.
Good morning, ma'am. Your name and where you're calling
from. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Just to pick up from what Lloyd said, I actually tried to get information on what the levels are. I mean, they're certainly much lower, as Lloyd points out, but, just are they on all the time? How often are they sending signals to the phone? Are they working when you're not on the phone? I mean, you just cannot get this information. And I've tried. I've talked to the Bluetooth Trade Association. They're just very hesitant to divulge any of this information, and this is just outrageous. And I just want to pick up one other thing about what Deborah said, and that is, she's talking about old standards. Well, if they revise them, there's a good chance, unless the public chimes in, that the standard will be loosened, not tightened, when the SEC takes a closer look at this. So, if the public is concerned, the public needs to speak out, because industry is in control, in the driver's seat, setting the standards, designing what research, if any, gets done, and unless the public says we want answers, nothing will happen.
Lloyd?
The increase in the standards that is being proposed under the vocabulary harmonization can triple the amount of exposure that we have today here in the United States.
What does that mean exactly?
That means you get three times more radiation coming to your head.
Let me explain. The current standard is averaged over 1 gram, the equivalent of a blueberry. The European standard in some European countries averages the same exposure over the equivalent of a plum. Hmm. So you're allowing more radiation into a larger space, which obviously would get more radiation into us. The technical details have been discussed on our website at ehtrust.org, but Lewis is absolutely correct. The current request that the FCC has issued for advice on whether to change its 17-year-old standard will result in a weakening of current standards unless the public gets involved and says, look, we want protection for our children and ourselves. Just like we got seatbelts and airbags into cars, we need to protect ourselves by hardware and software designs for phones. As Lloyd just said, if you use a Bluetooth, you may reduce your exposure directly into your head, but if you keep that phone in your pocket, you're increasing your body exposure. So Bluetooth may make sense, although we don't have the full data on it, if the phone is kept on your car seat or on your desk.
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about how we can actually get involved and demand actual data on this. And then we'll also take your calls. We almost have full lines. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you'd like to join in today's conversation, perhaps you have a perspective that has not yet been heard in today's discussion, or a question you'd like to ask, please call 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, the BBC's World Have Your Say.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are kicking off a week-long series about our hyper-connected world. Today we are talking about the microwave radiation that connects us to our phones, tablets, and other electronic devices. Tomorrow we're going to talk about what an alternative online economy would look like. In the first half of 2013, internet ad revenue reached $20 billion. So we'll talk about the economic drivers of the digital world, who's really benefiting, what are the alternatives, and on Wednesday we will talk about how this is all affecting children. You've probably seen so many kids with tablets or phones. Sometimes I see them at dinner throughout the whole dinner with their parents and they're on a phone. In many school districts, they're trying to embrace Wi-Fi. The goal is to have Wi-Fi in every classroom in the country. So how is this affecting children? That's on Wednesday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by Dr. Deborah Davis. She's president of Environmental Health Trust, a nonprofit devoted to researching and controlling avoidable environmental health threats. She's author of the book Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation and Your Health, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and What You Can Do to Protect Your Family. Lloyd Morgan is a senior science fellow at Environmental Health Trust. He's been working on these issues for more than a decade. Dr. Lewis Slesson is editor and publisher of Microwave News. They've been reporting on potential health effects for more than 30 years. And we've got full lines, but we'll have one open in a few minutes at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We brought up the FCC, and before we get to calls, Lloyd, I wanted to ask you about FCC Chair Tom Wieland, because at the end of the day, the FCC is the political body that has the authority to really regulate this industry and to give the public the information we need.
Yes, they're in charge of producing the standards and potentially updating them to triple the current level. By the way, it's Wheeler.
Wheeler.
And Tom Wheeler was the original president of the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association for 12 years. He was recently became the chairman of the Federal Communications Committee. And when the press release came out that Obama had nominated him, it was mentioned that he had been a major contributor to the Obama 2012 campaign. What we see is how embedded industry is at all levels. Now, cell phones, Wi-Fi in classrooms are a real horror. First off, tablets and laptops and so on, the exposure limits begin at 20 centimeters. That's about 8 inches, which means if you're closer than that, you could be getting more radiation than you would get from a cell phone.
Really?
And if you look at people putting laptops on their lap, that's absolutely crazy. You have studies showing significant effects on male sperm, as if though there's female sperm. Anyway, this is a major problem in and of itself, and because even the youngest children's kindergarten will now have tablets in their classrooms that are connected to Wi-Fi, they can be connected cabled, which is no radiation whatsoever, but that's not the plan.
Well, and the problem with that is if you play a game, you need the Wi-Fi connected to play the game. And
yes.
That's what most kids are doing.
Yes.
So just a couple of specific questions, because if you put a book between your lap and the laptop, does that make a difference?
It makes a big difference, a very big difference, and I would say on the desk.
Any separation is good. Any separation.
Anything.
It decreases as the square of the distance increases. So if it's two times further away, it's one quarter.
And is it better to turn the wireless off and plug in the cord?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no, you do not want to have Wi-Fi or wireless on a laptop or anything else, and then there you can be disabled, and you should just be on a cabled network.
But the other thing is to remember that, you know, a lot of people complain about cell towers, but then they put the Wi-Fi router right next to the computer that they're operating. And so, you know, it's like having a little cell tower right next to your head, or your body. You want to put that router away from where people spend time in the house. It doesn't. It'll still give you if you want Wi-Fi in your house, it'll still give you Wi-Fi, but you won't be exposed to it every time you sit next to the computer. I just also want to add one more thing about Tom Wheeler. Tom Wheeler, if you had to pinpoint one American who is most responsible for our lack of knowledge of cell phone radiation, it would be Tom Wheeler. as the head of the CTI, as Lloyd pointed out, he was in charge of a research program that basically, you know, pacified the public and pacified the government, but did practically nothing. We know so little about it today, and the single most responsible person is Tom Wheeler. Mm-hmm. It's you know, in no other industry would one have the former head of the lobbying group setting, you know, be responsible for the health standards. It's astonishing why the normal rules of conflict of interest don't apply in this area.
Well, we have a number of phone calls, so let's go to callers. Let's hear from GS in Richmond. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Now, I'm using ear gear here, so the mic may not be all that great. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're fine.
Okay, very good. All right, I would just offer two things. One, if you don't have ear gear and you're just using an iPhone, one thing you can do is when you talk to it, hold it away from your mouth about 6 inches, but the mic and the speaker are on the bottom of the phone. So you don't have to hold the phone against your head. In fact, it works better if you talk to the bottom of the phone. And they'll be able to hear you, and you'll be able to hear them. Now, as I say, right now I'm using the ear gear, so I'm not doing what I'm suggesting. But anyway, if anybody there has an iPhone, just look at the bottom, and you'll see that there are two little screen things. One of them is the mic, and the other is the speaker. So just put it on speakerphone and talk to the bottom of the phone, and you'll get the best sound quality that way. And again, I'm using ear gear.
Okay. Well, thank you.
So
he's absolutely correct. And let me tell you something else.
Okay.
Apple has put a proximity sensor into their newer phones, the Apple 5S. When you hold the phone next to any object, the brain or the body, the screen goes black. Why? To reduce radiation.
Hmm. Well, thank you for that tip. Let's go next to Chris in San Francisco. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi, you guys. Great show. You're preaching to the choir. I started following this stuff when my wife got pregnant. And my question is, I feel like eventually the industry will have to change the technology to make it more biocompatible because of the health risks. Is there anybody that's working on more biocompatible wireless technology right now?
The thing to understand here is that the technology is moving so much faster than our understanding of the biology that every time we think we understand something about the biology, the technology has changed. And the industry says, well, that doesn't apply anymore. The most classic example of that is between analog and digital phones. All the original research was analog phones, and then it went to digital. And then you had people like Consumer Reports saying, God knows why, that digital was safer. Well, most of the smart money will tell you that digital radiation is more biologically active than the analog. Yet, you know, because it's such a moving target, we'll never be ahead to answer this kind of a question.
May I explain that the old analog phones was the shoe phone, the big brick phone that was more like luggable than portable. The new phones are digital, the skinny little phones, and Lewis is absolutely correct. The digital pulsed irregular radiation is what we think is more disruptive. The analog phones had higher power. They used more watts. The digital phones use much weaker power. And the physicists continue to say that because the phones use weak power, they can have no biological effect. We know for many years that's not correct, that weakly powered digital devices seem to disrupt signals by other means than the high wattage old analog phones did.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Chris. Let's go next to Diane in San Francisco. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for the show. I wanted to know if EMF shielding fabrics help protect you.
Lloyd?
It's
and can you talk about what an EMF shielding?
Well, it would have to have basically the fabric would have to have wire in it and so on, and it would and it done right, it has a certain amount of protective effect. But there's also a lot of charlatans out there that produce devices that are supposedly help. I mean, one thing is very important to recognize, and that is if you actually shield the cell phone radiation, the cell phone doesn't work. It has to be able to connect to the rest of the world. The other thing that people don't really appreciate, and really it's all wireless things, but cordless phones are fairly ubiquitous as well. Mm. They radiate 24/7. There's not even an on-off switch. And the worst thing to do is to have the place where you put the handset, sometimes called the base station, anywhere close to your bed, though it's very common because people don't want to have to get out of bed at night if the phone rings.
This doesn't get that much attention.
It's as much danger as cell phones.
Really?
Yes.
The wireless landlines.
The science has, yes, the cordless phones that are connected to the landline is as dangerous from the published science, peer-reviewed science literature, as cell phones.
Because they are on 24/7, and if they are kept directly next to the head of the bed. Again, distance determines the exposure.
Hmm.
So if you have a cordless phone, Environmental Health Trust on our website, ehtrust.org, recommends that you keep it as far away as possible from where people are sleeping, living, and playing as the base station. And that will reduce your exposure. In fact, there is an EcoDect phone made by Siemens and others that is not on 24/7. But most American phones that are cordless are constantly functioning like a little mini base station in your home, which is why we recommend that everyone get landlines, old corded phones. Wired is better than wireless whenever it's possible to do that.
We have a caller from Santa Cruz who couldn't stay on, but she wanted to know about radiation from televisions, computer screens, and other devices. Lloyd?
Basically, anything that's designed as a transmitter is a problem. But TVs and radios and so on are not transmitters. Now, modern TVs have Wi-Fi connections, which is a transmitter, so that when you're downloading a movie, for example, you're actually sending out a radiated signal to download this movie, please.
Oh, I was just thinking, watching like Netflix House of Cards on a laptop in bed. That's probably one of a lot of our listeners' favorite things to do, including a lot of people at the station. That's probably not a good idea, right?
That's not a good idea. It's a great show, though.
But if you put a pillow, if you must do this and you use a pillow, or if you download it rather than stream it, then you disconnect from the Internet and watch it, that's a much smarter thing to do. In schools today, the cat is out of the bag because we have many schools around this country with children having iPads. They need some simple rules. First of all, download the information and then disconnect from the Internet whenever possible. Secondly, never have a child have the iPad on their lap. And it's as Lloyd and Lewis have said, these devices are tested at a distance of about 8 inches from an adult male weighing about 220 pounds, having an 11-pound head. They've never been tested or evaluated to be used for long-term on our children. So with respect to cordless phones and iPads, distance is your friend. I recommend getting rid of cordless phones, replacing with landlines for two reasons. A corded landline will work when the electricity goes out, as often can happen with storms, as we've seen this year. And secondly, it gives you security against hacking and other things because it's much harder to hack into or interfere with a wired connection than a wireless connection.
A crucial way to think about this is that we're used to thinking of pollution as an unwanted byproduct of something else. To borrow from Marshall McLuhan here, the medium is the message. I mean, it's not pollution most of the time. It's the signal you want, whether it's the movie and the House of Cards or your conversation or your email. This is what, you know, so people, you know, it's not something you can shield with the fabric because it won't work. The idea is that what people want the radiation because that's what the product that they want is. So it's a little bit more complicated than many other of the more traditional type of pollution problems we deal with.
Now, in fact, there's a product called Belly Armor that is marketed to pregnant women and to the tech world of men and women who want to be able to have healthy children when and if they choose to do so. And this is a blanket that is basically impregnated with a metal-like fabric that does block radiation. I've tested it myself, and as Lloyd indicated, if you really block all of the radiation from a phone, say putting it in a pocket of such material, the phone won't work. So, but if you want to protect a pregnant belly, which we know we need to do, the best protection is to avoid exposure if you can, and if you have to work in an office environment close to these things, then you may want to consider using such protective fabric, although it has not been tested to see whether you protect the belly, whether your exposure is then changed for the rest of the body. We simply do not know, which is why Environmental Health Trust has been urging a dollar a phone fee to create a major fund to train scientists to do the research and fund independent studies for the next 5 years, which clearly need to be carried out.
That is Dr. Deborah Davis. She is president of Environmental Health Trust and author of Disconnect, The Truth About Cell Phone Radiation and Your Health, What the Industry Has Done to Hide It, and What You Can Do to Protect Your Family. Lloyd Morgan is senior science fellow at Environmental Health Trust. He's been working on these issues for more than a decade. And Dr. Lewis Slesson is editor and publisher of Microwave News. They've been reporting on these issues for more than 30 years. And today we are talking about the microwave radiation that connects us to our phones, tablets, and other devices. How does this radiation actually work? What are the possible side effects? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. We'll have a line open in just a minute. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Why don't we go through a few phone calls to try to get as many as we can in by the end of the show, and then we'll get our guests to respond. Let's hear from Ellie in Lafayette. Hi, Ellie. Welcome to the show.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank all of you. This is an excellent show.
Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. Unfortunately, my husband is a victim of this corruption and collusion that's been going on between the industry, the FCC, and our government for many years. He has a brain tumor, which was attributed to his cell phone, more likely than not, to his cell phone use. And I want to point out that there's many others. I've met probably hundreds of people in the last 5 years that do or have perished now from cell phone-related brain tumors. So I want people to know that this can happen to them, and that I greatly appreciate the show and what's being discussed there today. Use the headset, protecting our children, telling them not to keep it under their pillows, get it out of their rooms at night if you can, is truly going to protect them. I'm seeing people now that are in their 20s and 30s that are dying from this, and they started using them when they were children. Mm. So using these simple devices to protect us are far less inconvenient than cancer. So, you know, I still see people, you know, their kids are holding them to their heads, and it's keeping them in their pockets, and it's heartbreaking. So again, I just want to thank all of you, and I appreciate this so much.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Thank you so much for calling in, Ellie.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll get a response in just a couple minutes. Let's go next to Bo in San Francisco. Hi, Bo.
Hi, it's not Bo. It's Mo.
Oh, sorry. Oh, hi, Mo.
How are you doing? Thanks for this wonderful show. My question is, your emphasis is on cell phones, but my question is about microwaves and have they improved? And could you be out of the room when you put the microwave on? And just a clarification about the cell phone, is it a cordless phone? Is it the base or is it the phone itself? Because I'm talking to you on speaker.
Okay. Thank you. I'm so glad you brought up the question about microwaves because we have one.
Let me try the microwave oven thing.
Yeah.
All microwave ovens leak. Period. I mean, it's a known fact and uncontestable by anyone. But here again, the further away you are from the oven, the better off you are. So the real hazard is, you know, putting your eye, which is an extremely sensitive organ, to microwave radiation because there's no cooling. And like watching a kid watching something cook in a microwave oven, you know, I used to tell people to black out the screen, so that could not happen. The radiation is highest next to the window, next to the door seals, and they all leak. So you don't want you want to take two steps back, but you want to make sure your children don't hang around the microwave oven.
If you want to test how much leakage you get from your microwave oven, put your cell phone in the oven. Do not turn it on, and then call the number. If it rings, clearly radiation is getting in, which means radiation gets out.
Do any of you use microwaves?
I use a microwave occasionally. I stand far away from it. And I have tested that with somebody else's cell phone, and that's in fact what happens. And I've heard nobody that doesn't have the phone ring when they put their cell phone inside. Remember, do not turn on the microwave oven because you'll destroy your phone and probably the oven too.
And then Mo wanted to know about cordless phones. Is the problem the base or the phone itself?
It's both. That is answered, yes. I mean, the cell phone placed to your head is a very big problem. The base station radiating 24/7, whether or not you're using the headsets or even in use, is also a problem. So it's a double whammy. once again.
And again, baby monitors and garage door openers and microwave ovens and cordless phones all use the same frequency that is about between 900 to 2.4 billion cycles a second. All right? That's how much they're doing, between 900,000 and 2.4 billion cycles a second. But the difference is the power.
One thing about microwave ovens, which is cafeteria workers are really, they will be, you know, when you say the problem is not a big hazard for microwave ovens these days, that's generally true at home. But if you're working in a hot kitchen for a full shift or longer, you might be exposed to quite a lot of that microwave radiation from normal operation because you're right there next to it for hours at a time.
All right, thanks for calling in, Mo. Let's connect to Marie-Louise in Palo Alto.
Yes,
hi.
Thank you very much. Good morning. And I could have missed this because I had to cut out for a little while from listening. But my question is, I do what a man suggested of using my phone on speaker a lot of the time. But, of course, here and there I'm outdoors. I might even be in a store. And I get a call, and I would sort of contribute to noise pollution, I feel, because people around me can also hear the caller on my telephone if I have it on speaker. So I wondered how somebody would deal with that.
Use a wired headset.
What are the best kind? Because there are so many out there.
I don't know.
The difficulty is this. There are some wired headsets that are very cheap with very thin wires that if you drape the wires over your body, you're actually extending the radiation through the wires. And you want to spend enough money that the wires are insulated and that if you can, the hollow tube at the very end of the wired headset gives you additional protection. Just actually hollowed air tube. Sometimes they come with a ferrite bead, and that actually even enhances it. But the fact of the matter is, any headset generally will be reducing your radiation. This has been tested and is recommended by authorities in Finland, in France, in Israel. In many countries, it is against the law to sell a cell phone without a wired headset.
What about the white earbuds that come with the iPhone from Apple? Because a lot of people use those.
Right, and those have been tested and to be rather effective when used as proposed, but not keeping the phone in the pocket, especially the front pocket right over the reproductive organs.
You know, one of the things that's very important here is that children actually absorb more radiation than adults. Children are at greater risk from all carcinogens than adults, and the younger the child, the higher the risk. So if you started smoking at 8, you have a much higher risk than if you started smoking at 16. If you started using cell phones at very young age, you have a much higher risk than you would if you started later, which is not to say that you should, you know, really incorporate a risk that isn't within what I call safe enough. That is, cars are not safe, but we use cars. They are safe enough. Keeping the radiation away from you is the secret.
All right. And we've got a number of emails. Can you clarify whether you're talking about a landline cordless or cell phone? I think this is in reference to the cordless phones.
You were talking Environmental Health Trust recommends a corded landline as a security issue, first and foremost.
Okay.
Corded landline as opposed to a cordless phone. If you must have a cordless phone, try to get an EcoDect type phone that is not programmed to be on 24/7. As an example, in Switzerland, the law requires that any cordless phone be what is called an ecophone, namely not on 24/7.
Mm-hmm. And when you put your phone in airport mode, is the radiation totally off?
Yes.
Okay. So
but on airplane mode, you are able to connect to a Wi-Fi network if you choose to do so. So you want to be aware. It's there's a lot of technical complexity here, and most people just throw up their hands at the complexity. But the simplest rule is that distance is your friend. Airplane mode does cut off the ability to get the wireless signal generally.
Okay. And so we have a couple minutes left. I just want to ask you all, what can the public do to try to get access to this information at a time when the chair of the FCC used to work for the industry?
And well, they can read our website. They can, if they want to get really informed, they can look at Lewis Lesson's Microwave News, which for 30 years has been repeatedly documenting the growing science and the efforts of this industry to discredit, dismiss, deny, and do whatever they can to try to destroy the credibility of those scientists who are doing independent work. They can look at work like Hugh Taylor, chairman of the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Yale, who we featured at the Commonwealth Club on in December 9th in San Francisco, and where you and I talked about this at that time. We will have up the videos of that entire program within the next month, so they can get informed. But the most important thing they need to do is to write into their senators and congressmen now, urging that standards for cell phones be strengthened to protect children, pregnant women, and youngsters, understanding that we in this democracy have a right to know about cell phone radiation. San Francisco City Supervisors unanimously passed a right to know about cell phone radiation when the mayor was Gavin Newsom. Mm. Over the past several years, that industry has effectively undermined that law, so that recently the city signed a consent agreement to not enforce its own law because they feared, and they said this in their public statements, that they would be punished by having to pay the legal costs of this industry. Judge Alsop gave them about $400 in legal fees to the industry, indicating that that was an unlikely scenario. Nonetheless, the city voted not to enforce its own law on the right to know at this time.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we will continue this discussion. Dr. Deborah Davis is president of Environmental Health Trust and author of Disconnect. Lloyd Morgan, senior science fellow at Environmental Health Trust. And Dr. Lewis Lesson is editor and publisher of Microwave News. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. How should we understand the invisible web that connects our digital devices? On the next Your Call, we'll begin a week-long series about digital communication and the way these devices influence our health and private and public spaces. Cell phones and computers have revolutionized the way we communicate, but how do they really work? What do you want to know about the invisible web that connects us and the possible side effects? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.